Our next guest played for the Chiefs from 92 to 95, a year for the Rams. He is the host of the Believe Podcast Network's Believe in Chiefs on Twitter. You could follow him. Use the handle at JoeValerio73. He's an Ivy Leaguer, a Penn Quaker. Joe, it's great having you on. How's life treating you and yours during these most unique times?
Oh, Steve, well, it's great to be on. Thank you so much. Yeah, everybody's doing fine. You know, we're making our way. There's a lot of people out there who are struggling in a lot of ways. So we feel very lucky that, you know, we're doing okay and we're doing our part and doing what we can to, you know, make sure we all get through this together. It's been a crazy time. And, you know, it, hey, speaking of the Super Bowl, it's great that we have a distraction, right? I think it's going to be a solemn event. I think it's going to be something where people are going to be really thinking hard about the state of the world, but yet, you know what, in times like this, we need distractions, and I'm just glad that we'll have, you know, the Super Bowl to celebrate together as a country, so.
Yeah, you know, knowing your background and just hearing the news that your head coach from those Chiefs days, Marty Schottenheimer, who had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's 7 years ago, now moved to hospice like you. He's a Pennsylvania guy, played at Pitt, an incredible head coach. Well, could you just tell us what it's like to play for a man like Coach Schottenheimer and his influence?
Oh, man, Coach Schottenheimer, I'm telling you, Steve, he was, and I'm not just saying this because of the situation we're in or that I played for the Chiefs. He was like a father figure to us, and especially to me. I so many lessons I learned from him I've taken into my family life, my business, the business world, people I've coached in football, some of my students that I'm an adjunct professor. I teach leadership class. It's just, you know, so many things. One of the things I remember the most about Coach Schottenheimer is, on the first day of minicamp after we were drafted, he handed all the rookies a notepad with our names embossed on it. And he said, you know, anything that anybody ever says is always worth writing down. And I'm telling you, I use that lesson with everybody I come in contact with when I have the chance. And one of my favorites to teaching people about preparation, you know, he used to say all the time, you know what, guys, the more you sweat in the off season, the less you bleed during the season. And, you know, it was that pictorial view of working out and then knowing the more you worked out in the off season, the better you were going to be in the season. It was all about preparation. And that was Coach Schottenheimer in a nutshell. He was always so prepared. And it's really sad for his family. And I'm thinking, you know, thinking very hard for them right now and hoping that everything works out.
You know, I mentioned earlier you played at UPenn. You won an Ivy League title. You were a team captain, a first-team All-American as a senior. And that's not a very common path to get to the pros. Right now you got Brandon Copeland of the Patriots, Greg Van Roten of the Jets, Justin Watson of Tampa Bay, your fellow Quakers.
Yeah.
What could you tell us about that mix? I mean, it's the ultimate in academia, yet you were still able to achieve the ultimate dream of making the NFL.
Yeah, no offense to our, you know, Cameron Brate, who's the starting tight end, or one of the tight ends he starts occasionally for the Bucks, a Harvard guy, you know. I always joke, I said, you know, 6 months earlier, I was blocking Biff McNutty from Harvard, and then I was going against Howie Long and Reggie White. Like, what a transition, right? I mean, holy cow. It was, number one, for me, I was not highly recruited coming out of high school by more, you know, football powerhouses. Not that Penn isn't a super respectable program. I mean, they've always put up a very quality, competitive Ivy League team, always competitive outside of the conference. I mean, you know, 1986, when I was a senior in high school, that year, you know, they had gone down to Navy and beat Navy on Navy's home turf. So, you know, always a great chance to compete. And I went there because of the type of football program it was, and number one, it was probably at the time in high school the best football school that was recruiting me. So I took the opportunity to go there and, you know, get to perform out on Franklin Field, historic Franklin Field, and I was super lucky that caught some eyes of the scouts and was able to continue on after Penn. So I always had to joke with people about, you know, not playing for Joe Paterno, you know. That was always a battle. And I remember, if you have time for a funny story, Neil Smith, who was one of our, you know, fantastic defensive ends in the 90s with the Chiefs and then went on to the Broncos as well. You know, Neil went to Nebraska, and Penn and Nebraska were playing in the opening round of the basketball tournament in 1994-95 when, you know, Penn had two NBA players on that team, Matt Maloney, who played for the Phoenix Suns, and then Jerome Allen, who also played in the NBA. And I knew that the team was good because I just followed them. I followed my alma mater. And so Neil says, "Hey Joe, somebody in the locker room, you know, we were at the workout facility in the off season, said, we're playing, our schools are playing each other. You want to pull money on it?" And I said, "Sure, Neil." We were the 11th seed. Nebraska was the 5th seed, but I knew Penn was probably a higher seed than they could have been, at least just based on their talent. And I said, "Sure, Neil, you're on. It's $50. So we put a little nice wager on it. He comes in on Monday into the weight room. He says, "Joe, here's your $50. He said, "But you gotta tell me one thing. What in the world is a Quaker?" So it was like and I said, "Well, why do you say that, Neil?" He goes, "I thought you went to Penn State. I thought you were Nittany Lion." And then all of a sudden I'm seeing Nebraska Cornhuskers versus the Penn Quakers. He goes, "Aren't they like a peace loving, you know, religious sect in Philadelphia?" And I was like, "Yeah, Neil, that's what they are, and that's our mascot." That's amazing. I was always fighting that, always fighting that little stigma there.
And, of course, UPenn, the last Ivy League team to make the Final Four, losing to Magic Johnson in Michigan State in 79. Just happened to know that off the top of my head. Talking with Joe Valerio of the Believe in Chiefs podcast. So over the years, even way out here, I've run into coaches and players from Doylestown, Malvern, Philly itself, and I lived 2 years in King of Prussia right there on DeKalb Pike, and I was there from 88 through early 90, so you were at UPenn. So, of course, the critical question is, how often did you visit the legendary King of Prussia Mall?
Oh, well, yeah. First of all, Steve, how bizarre of the name of that town, King of Prussia, right? I mean, it's like, who names a town King of Prussia? And then, first of all, if you're from Philadelphia, it's King of Prussia. Right, that's how everybody shortens it. But yeah, I mean, you should see it now if you haven't been back in a while. It's like a city, and of course, it's the largest. It's a good piece of trivia here for all your listeners out in Oregon. It is the largest indoor retail mall in the United States. I think it might even be North America. It's the largest indoor retail space now. Mall of America is bigger, but you got to remember, Mall of America has an amusement park inside of it. So, but when you're talking about pure retail space, King of Prussia Mall is the largest in the country, at least maybe even North America, and it's grown even more. And it's like a city there. There are planned living communities, from townhouses, single family homes, apartments, like probably 20 times more restaurants than when you were back here, Steve. It's grown into quite a mega site. Of retail and living. So it's a really cool place. If anybody is ever on the East Coast, it's definitely worth seeing. If you like shopping and you like a one-stop place where you can stay at a hotel, go to the movies, eat anywhere you want, any kind of restaurant you want to eat at, and then do some incredible shopping. So, and it's only 40 minutes west of Philadelphia, and 30 minutes without any traffic.
That's awesome. Before we get to the game, that 93 season, I mean, your rookie year ended with a playoff loss to Buffalo, 92 to the Chargers, and then you got this Montana guy to play quarterback. You added Marcus Allen. You already had, like you said, Neil Smith, a Hall of Famer, and Derek Thomas. What stands out when you think of that team's run all the way to that AFC title game that year?
It was magical. I mean, it started with the offseason and training camp, and we were in River Falls, Wisconsin. It was a Division III school in the University of Wisconsin school system, and it was one of their satellites. There was the Packers trained at Wisconsin Lacrosse, I think, or I'm sorry, that's where the Saints were. The Packers were at one of the Wisconsin schools, so there was this cheese league they had created, and we used to get maybe a couple hundred people that would come up to watch us practice. Sometimes people would drive up from Kansas City or fly in, and but it was very limited, right? Because it was so far away from our home turf. And I'll never forget when and that was my rookie year in 91. And then in 1993, Joe Montana and Marcus Allen come, and on our first day of practice, we weren't even in pads. We were in helmets and shorts, and there were 5,000 people packed into this Division III stadium to see Joe Montana and Marcus Allen. And Alex Gibbs, our offensive line coach, he stopped us, and he had this fantastic North Carolina accent. I'll probably butcher it, being, you know, Italian kid from South Philly. So he says, hey guys, because I got to tell you something. See all that crowd up there? They ain't here to see you. and all the offensive linemen looked at each other like, yeah, you're probably right. And he goes, but your job just got a whole lot more important this year. So, you know, we were like, the pressure was on, you know, to protect Joe and Marcus. And I'm telling you, Steve, it was a magical run. We beat Pittsburgh at home in overtime. Nick Lowry field goal. We scored the game-tying touchdown with no time left on the clock. Tim Barnett strike from Joe Montana. You know, we go to the House of Pain and we beat Houston in Houston in their last, which would ultimately be their last game in Houston. And they were on an 11-0 run. You know, they had the run and shoot offense with Warren Moon, Buddy Ryan's vaunted, you know, 46 defense, and Joe just picked them apart. And we came back home to an airport of 25,000 fans at like 3 o'clock in the morning. Because you know, here we are going to the AFC, you know, championship game, and the you know, the city was electric, and we just we were so close. We felt like we had all the tools to beat the Bills because we had beaten them earlier in the year. Now, granted, it's 27 years almost to the day that we lost to the Bills. That, you know, we just beat the Bills, right? The Chiefs just beat the Bills, and then it was 27 years. Almost to the day before that, when the Bills and the Chiefs had played in the AFL championship game. So there's this weird 27-year cycle with Bills and Chiefs being in a playoff game or a championship game. So we thought we had them, but you know that defense from Buffalo was too much, and as was the Bills' offense. We knew we had the defensive firepower to hold Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas down, and we did. It wasn't a very high scoring game. But once Joe Montana got knocked out of the game, we, you know, nothing against Dave Craig. He was a fantastic quarterback, and he came in and made a valiant effort. But we just knew the magic had run out on us when we lost Joe. But it was a great run. So I was so excited that we got that revenge against the Bills this year. And here we are. You know, the Chiefs are back in the Super Bowl.
Talking with Joe Valerio, who does the Believe in Chiefs podcast. You know, somewhat lost between Championship Sunday now and now is losing the anchor left tackle, Eric Fisher, to that Achilles injury. We know Mitch Schwartz hasn't played in months. So in what you've learned, who you've spoken with, do they move Mike Remmers from the right side? What is Wisniewski's role going to be? I mean, what's the word about that line going against that Tampa line, which was a terror against the Packers?
I wake up in a, you know, being an offensive lineman, I keep waking up in a cold sweat at night thinking about that front four, you know, of the Buccaneers. I mean, you know, Vita Vea is going to be back. Golston is no slouch. You know, Jason Pierre-Paul, you know, he's on fire right now. And then you got Ndamukong Suh. I mean, it's like, who are the Chiefs going to double team? You know, who are they going to chip coming out of the backfield? You know, it's a mystery. And, you know, I think a lot of people are forgetting, too, that this Chiefs offensive line, it's as makeshift as it is, it's even more makeshift than people think. Because when you really think about this offensive line, I mean, don't forget, you know, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif was starting left guard last year for the Chiefs, and he's actually practicing medicine and treating COVID patients up in his home country of Canada. He's a doctor, and he decided to sit this season out so he could use his medical prowess to take care of patients, which is unbelievably admirable, right? And so so they started out in the hole there, and then, you know, then you know, Assembly, they pick up Assembly, and what a find. I mean, he was having a fantastic beginning of the season. He was playing some of the best football he's played, and he has a season-ending injury. And then Mitchell Schwartz, who was the stalwart of that line, he started, you know, he was Iron Man, started X amount of games in a row, and then we lose Eric Fisher. It's just like, oh man, what the heck? But the silver lining in this whole thing, Steve, is the Chiefs front office and coaching staff, what an unbelievable job they did of creating depth on this offensive line, picking up Mike Remmers, who's going to start at left tackle. You've got, you know, Nick Allegretti, who's the youngest of the starters. You know, he's really come along this season, right? Austin Ryder, solid center. He's been, you know, been a starter for several years. And then they pick up Wisniewski, right? How smart was that? I mean, here's a guy that's, you know, went to the Super Bowl with the Eagles, went to the Super Bowl with the Chiefs, goes to the Steelers, comes back to the Chiefs. I mean, I'm really excited about, you know, what this team, you know, what this team is going to do up front because of that depth that they had. And there's not a lot of teams that put that much stock in the depth of, you know, of the offensive line, right? They just, it's almost like hope, right? And hope's not a great strategy, but, you know, I just think it's, and then Andrew Wiley's going to start at right tackle, and he's been a solid starter at the guard position. So, you know, I mean, nobody's really worried about it. I mean, you know, it's kind of like next guy in philosophy.
Sure.
I'm a little more worried about in the running game than in the passing game because Patrick, it seems like the more you rush him, the worse the pass protection, and the more you blitz, the better he plays, which is so uncanny. I just worry about the run game if they can make sure they get the chemistry going.
A couple final thoughts for Joe Valerio of the Believe in Chiefs podcast. I mentioned you played with Montana. This game has Brady, obviously the unparalleled resume. You just mentioned Mahomes, who has done as much his first 3 years as a starter as anyone. I mean, the man is a wizard. I refer to him mm-hmm. as frustratingly elusive. So through the lens of a lineman, a player, you know, we know what we do see. What don't we see that just makes him so unique?
You know, I honest to goodness, I really think he has six eyes. I think he's got two in the back of his head, two on the side, and two in the front. Because what he does that makes his line look so good is I call it, he finds the pocket within the pocket. You know, there's not a lot of quarterbacks can do that. And I think that's how the Chiefs are going to have to beat Tom Brady. It's how the Eagles beat Tom Brady back in 17, right? They pressured him right up into his face, up the middle. And that's, you know, that's what the Eagles did. And that's how Brady can get flustered, right? When he can't make his full throwing motion because he's not going to be mobile, right? He's not going to do, you know, Patrick's no speed burner, right? I mean, he's the first to admit he's not incredibly fast. But he's, like you said, he's very elusive, and he knows how to find quickly those pockets within the pocket to give him that extra second or two and use his cannon arm, which gives his receivers the advantage, right? With, you know, you got the, I'll use an NBA analogy, you got the Travis Kelce posting up like a good old-fashioned NBA center in the middle of the field, and then you've got these, the Legion of Zoom, right? Using their speed vertically and horizontally to open things up for Patrick. It almost looks like they're playing schoolyard football at times. And there's so much improvisation that goes on with Eric Bieniemy's offense. So, you know, I think it's going to be a great game. And that's what makes Patrick Patrick. You know, he's not running a 4.44 40, but man, he really does know how to move around the pocket as a straight drop back quarterback, which he is.
And lastly, Coach Andy Reid, you know, there's a guy who had so many close calls, a Super Bowl appearance, all those NFC title game appearances with your hometown Eagles. You know, he's 91-37 as a Chiefs coach. They only missed the playoffs once. We know the players get the glory, and, you know, like you said, this team has playmakers for eternity. But what could you tell us about Coach Reid? I mean, bold, daring, what makes him so special?
Yeah, I think creative too. You know, he's very creative. He and Eric Bieniemy have worked together to build a playbook that maximizes everybody's potential. And I think that's what he's a master of. He did it with those Eagles teams, and it showed, right, with their, you know, multiple NFC championship appearances and getting to the Super Bowl. He takes the talent that he has and he finds them the right place, but he also puts them in the right place. And his defenses do it defensively as well, because I think this defense is one of the most underrated things of Andy's coaching career. You know, everybody wants to talk about Patrick and Tyreek and Travis and, you know, this fantastic explosive offense that they have and, you know, what they've been able to do with this makeshift offensive line. But, you know, this defense has gotten better and better each week, and I think they're the unsung heroes of this team. They're a little bit bend don't break. Right, they don't. You know, they're. You see teams move the ball on them, but they don't always give up the touchdown. And Andy just knows how to get the players in the right spot, and he's done it defensively just as much as he's done it offensively. So I think that's what makes Andy is he's sneaky about getting the right people in the right place and maximizing their talent with the playbook that fits the team, as opposed to trying to get the team to fit his playbook. That makes sense?
Yeah, it does. I always say the Ivy Leaguers make sense, and I just go along with it, and that's just the, that's just the rule. Folks, awesome stuff. He's Joe Valerio, the Penn Quaker, the part-time spokesman for the King of Prussia Mall, host of the Believe in Chiefs podcast on the terrific Believe Podcast Network. You can follow him on Twitter at JoeValerio73. Joe, greatly appreciate your time. Really enjoyed it. Wishing you and your family continued success, safety, and I'm going to throw in sanity. And thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Stephen. Same to you, and to all your listeners out in Eugene. Thank you for having me on, and everybody be safe out there.
All right, my pleasure. You be well, sir. Take care.